cue that cheesy intro music. Dun, 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 dun. Going and going, yeah. Happy Patch Tuesday, everyone, and welcome to March of 2024 and to the Automox Fix Tuesday podcast. It's me, Tom Boyer, again, and today I'm joined by Matt and Jason. You both want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi, I'm Jason Kikta. I'm the CISO here at Automox. Matt?
And I am Matt. I am a security engineer here at Automox.
Awesome. Thank you both for joining me on our wonderful March adventure. Well, cool. Some juicy stuff coming out of both, you know, Microsoft and Apple. I don't know if you saw the Apple release notes for 14.4, but what a doozy. What a doozy.
Yeah, right? It was almost like the folks at Cupertino decided yesterday when they dropped 14.4 to kind of upstage Patch Tuesday today and really bring out a parade of things. So it's definitely a spicy week in InfoSec and a lot of stuff that, you know, needs to be dealt with right away.
Yeah, and I think, sure. I mean, we're just scrolling through that list, not even reading. And I think it took us 2 to 5 minutes to even get through the list. We're just watching that scroll bar, like, keep scrolling.
Keeps going.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a long, you know, Apple usually releases like 3 or 4 or 5, right, in their updates, but they must have had a busy year.
I lost count.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you know, and some of them are minor, but there are some ones in there that we're going to talk about that are just, wow. I mean, they're pretty, you know, seem pretty unpleasant in scope and. It wasn't even so much a particular CVE. The thing that caught my eye when we looked through the Apple list was how it, you know, it was like 5 or 6 CVEs centered around a central topic that just kind of kept going, and they're all different and distinct CVEs. And that's pretty rare these days to see that. It still happens, but it's not a common occurrence, to be sure.
Yeah,
and I think it was across the board too, right? Across a lot of components. I mean, WebKit got hit pretty hard. We saw Siri could leak some sensitive files potentially.
Very, you know, interesting.
The good old hidden photos trick. Don't put anything in there that you don't want to be seen.
That's right. Right.
And I've said it multiple times, I think, in this podcast, but I do feel like the last 2 years and even into this year that there has been a renewed focus on Apple's security. And I don't think I've seen so much, you know, security updates.
Yeah.
Than I've ever seen from Apple. So it's just, I think people are, you know, they're really starting to take a very close look on the Apple internals, and I think a lot of it is from that.
Yeah, but it's cool seeing the community come together to find these, right? I mean, it's researchers across all different domains coming together to kind of disclose these. So that's cool to see as well.
Well, they haven't forgot about Microsoft either. And Tom, you were saying this first one in Azure is pretty spicy.
Yeah, so CVE 2024-21400, and it's a pretty long one, so bear with me here. Microsoft Azure Kubernetes Service Confidential Container Elevation of Privilege Vulnerability. You know, if they added a couple more words to it, I think it would be easier to say. But, you know, reading through the notes, it to me, this sounds like, right, an attacker who successfully exploited this vulnerability could steal credentials and affect resources beyond the security scope managed by Azure Kubernetes Service Confidential Containers, right? And, you know, I'm speculating a little bit here, but it, you know, just reading this, it sounds like I can get onto a node of a managed Kubernetes service. And Matt, yeah, and I'm also curious, right, having spent so much time inside and outside Kubernetes, kind of what your take is on this and almost like, you know, what makes your hair stand up when you see things like this?
Yeah, so I think sort of just with everyday Kubernetes clusters, things that we run in, you know, that everybody runs in their prod environment, it's really not secured by default. And you really have to put in the work to make it secure. And I think with this confidential computing, you know, when we think of confidential computing, we think security and it's locked down, it's isolated, it could be like air gapped, whatever. And so I think with this vulnerability, you know, that just unleashes so many possibilities for an attacker to jump on a confidential system and either extract secrets, just like you said, parts of the node, any sort of things on the node, you know, workloads like pods. And from what I'm reading, it's with this ConfCom CLI tool. And I just think, you know, if you're running a really sensitive workload in confidential computing, I think the thought is this should be secure. And this kind of opens up, you know, just the possibilities for so much just private sensitive information to be utilized by an attacker.
Right.
Yeah. When I saw the part about, you know, an attacker can access the untrusted AKS Kubernetes node and AKS confidential container to take over confidential guests and containers beyond the network stack it might be bound to, that alarmed me pretty good because, yeah. You know, I mean, to Tom's point, this is a bit of speculation, but that sounds like this is a cross-tenant attack. And, you know, if so, that, you know, that breaks the security assumptions that a lot of folks have and really presents an elevated risk.
Yeah, especially in a hosted environment, right? When I see something like, and the patch notes say it verbatim, an unauthenticated attacker can move the same workload onto a machine they control where the attacker is root. And, you know, where my head gets spinning is like, I'm an attacker. Do I have an AKS cluster? And then I'm moving workloads from that for somewhere where I have access to like these other nodes, right? Like that's where I'm stuck. You know, that's where I'm paranoid. It's like,
I'm trying to think of like,
am I spoofing like Kubelet or something? And I'm moving their internal node onto my node through like some kind of weird internal Kubelet attack, right?
Like, I mean, could it be something with etcd as well, like state, right, or something like that? Or maybe, I don't know, like, yeah, I was just thinking that same thing, like trying to figure out how they would kind of move those workloads, whatever those might be, onto their own system. And so it's probably got to do something with the backend or state or something that's saving.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Or like those exporting the containers, right? You know, like, yeah, you can dump the container with Docker or et cetera and export it and move it off. And I just, yeah. Scary stuff, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah, I'm a little surprised it only got a 9.0 on the CVSS scale, but
yeah.
On the other hand, the exploit code maturity is listed as proof of concept. So fingers crossed that this one, you know, it was caught early, and if you patch quickly enough, your exposure will be minimal. But definitely not one to put off. This is a must do.
Yeah, agreed. And you know, a lot of it is just kind of knowing what you're running and understanding the security implications of that, right? Like a lot of the times we trust these vendors to, you know, manage a lot of this backend risk, and, you know, these things come up and it's important. And
yeah, I mean, this is the kind of risk that we spend all day, every day managing, and it's not easy, and it's constant. You can never let your guard down. And why we have so many people on our team, it requires a lot of investment, and it requires just constant vigilance.
Yeah, yep. Agreed.
I'm just like Tom said, observability is huge, right? Having visibility into your whole stack. And I mean, if you don't have that and you don't know what's running, like you can't baseline that, and then you don't know when something bad is in there. So
Right. And then you got to get your detections right. You got to tune those detections so you don't get alert fatigue. You got to automate your alerts. You got to automate some of your responses. You have to have a playbook that you've rehearsed and practiced again and again and again. And it's just, it is not a minimal thing.
Yeah. Speaking of letting our guard down, you know, this next one, CVE 2024-26164, Microsoft Django backend for SQL Server remote code execution vulnerability, right? This all stems from SQLi, you know, everyone's favorite attack
what year is
from
it?
2008, still hanging around these products. You know, an attacker could use the unsanitized parameter into a SQL query to trigger a SQL injection. I mean, is that not just like the definition of one equals one?
And it's you go down to base score metrics, like network, low, 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 none, unchanged, high, 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 high. And you're right. Just like, oh, no.
Yeah. And, you know, Matt, I'm curious, your thoughts there, right? I feel like this is the entry level security vulnerability that everyone always plays with in the very, very beginning, right? And just curious what your thoughts are on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I am starting to learn the sort of AppSec red team, been doing a lot of hack the box lately. So trying to learn those skills. And I always see the retired machines. It's sometimes those are SQLi and those are years old. So it's really interesting. I mean, everybody says all the tools are in place these days to mitigate SQLi, but then we see things like this come up where it's, you know, it's a plugin to basically use with Django and SQL. And it seems like it's pretty heavily used. I mean, if you look at their GitHub repo, like got a couple hundred stars, stuff like that. So it's really interesting to see from sort of, a novice in this area stepping into it, seeing these kind of surface in these patch notes.
Yeah, it's rare to see these, you know, these days, and just seeing that, you know, you could use the unsanitized parameter into a SQL query to trigger a SQL injection. Like, that's just not really where we're supposed to be anymore. So it's surprising, not just that it's there, but that it's, you know, probably been there for a while and that it's escaped detection for this long. But, or perhaps I'm mistaken and this is a relatively recent introduction that has somehow circumvented security checks. But this is why, security review of your CI/CD pipeline and the code coming out of it is so important to just make sure that even small mistakes don't happen, because the implications can be so large. And I mean, I'm reading here, successful exploitation vulnerability simply requires the attacker or targeted user to leverage Microsoft Access application to automatically talk to a SQL server while utilizing a remote SQL server address that they control. That is not a high bar. That is really pretty easy to do. It's not one to wait on, because this one will eat your lunch.
Yeah. And, you know, those backend package updates are pretty simple, I assume, right? You probably should be pinning your packages anyway. So this is just a simple PR, hopefully caught from your upstream, you know, SCA tools. So, but still funny to see in this day and age.
RCE through SQL injection. Like you said, Matt, what year is it?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, it's cool, but also concerning to see this in the wild. That was an interesting one to see in their patch notes.
Yeah. There's probably some people who do introductory red team training packages right now are like cheering, like, yeah, my content's still relevant.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, and like the tool maturity in this space is rather high, right? Like, tools like SQL Map, you know, everyone's favorite red team tool. You get it off GitHub and you just fire it away, and it's just firing thousands of, you know, SQLi payloads. And this will probably just be another one eventually, I assume. So it's the bar is rather low for this, right? Which I always find
interesting. Turns out you can successfully DOS a server with SQL Map as well. So it's fun also. Another benefit.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, some other good stuff as well in the Patch Tuesday notes. So, you know, take a look and see. But yeah, I think we'll spend the rest of this time talking about these super juicy Apple ones, you know.
That update yesterday was extreme.
I know.
I guess day before yesterday now, just like going through my and watching my, you know, I have a MacBook Pro. I have an M2. Like it's not a, you know, this is not some ancient thing. And it took a long time. And I'm, you know, my iPhone as well, like it sat there and like, you know, and it was odd because I had looked at the little notes about, you know, what's in this update. And it was talking mostly about features and things. And I'm like, man, like none of this, like you're adding emojis. This doesn't sound as goofy. Yeah. And then we went through and looked at the security notes and it just keeps going. And it's so many, I mean, the one that got me at first, you know, there were really two, the WebKit one, but the Apple image viewing was the first one that caught my eye of, I mean, I'm just going to read off, I'm going to rattle off the CVEs as quick as I can here, just to prove a point of CVE 2024, they're all 2024s, 23270, 23257, 23258, 23286, and 23234. That's just their image-related stuff in image processing, image I/O, and the Intel graphics driver. Wow. And they're impactful bugs, right? These are not minor things. You know, execute arbitrary code with kernel privileges. Processing an image may result in disclosure of process memory. You know, somebody lost a fantastic exploit chain. Here is what happened.
That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah. arbitrary code execution, and arbitrary code execution with kernel privileges, of course. I just, oof, out of bounds, right? Buffer overflow. This, to me, I was listening to, you know, a podcast that we all enjoy, the Risky Business podcast. And I was listening to, you know, last week's episode. And the host, Patrick Gray, talk about how, you know, the White House had put out that paper talking about memory safe vulnerabilities and how they had, and their reaction at first was the same as mine of, you know, that's not a lot of exploitation these days because we see so many mass exploitation events that are really focused around misconfiguration and people who make their, you know, they don't focus enough on secure by default, the vendors don't focus enough on secure by default. And so the, you know, the sort of secure development stuff is easy for people to sort of, you know, say is not as high a priority. Like it's important, but it's, you know, is it as high a priority to use memory safe languages? But, you know, they came back in last week's episode and said, you know, hey, we were wrong because we went and we looked at the raw numbers and we had some points, you know, someone on our show did some further investigation, Tom Uren actually did some additional investigation, and like it is over half of security flaws these days are still memory related and related to memory safety. And we see it here in this image processing and image IO stuff where it's just, you know, improve memory handling, out of bounds read, like buffer overflow, right? Like what decade is this? Like buffer overflow, but it still happens today. And so, you know, I think that policy memo from the White House was right on. I know we've done a lot of talking about it at Automox of cleaning up the last vestiges of our non-memory safe languages and getting rid of them because it's just, it's too easy to make errors there. And I know we spend a lot of time focused on ensuring those aren't on our product. And it's just, it's very hard to do even with, you know, strong, well-trained developers and a robust security team, like, and Apple certainly has those, and yet these things happen.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's hard to manage memory, right? And I think that's why so many language moves higher in the stack because a lot of that stuff is abstracted away and, you know, you don't have to really manage memory anymore and some of the newer languages. And, you know, I get it. You know, it might not be as performant, right, once it's compiled, but, you know, I get it because, right, I shouldn't have to worry about my user opening a PDF and, you know, the Mac kernel overflows and they can put some...
And it's really hard when you're writing an operating system, right? When you're writing it, I mean, and look at modern operating systems like modern Windows, modern Mac OS are very performant on older hardware.
Yeah.
You know, they last. They last a long time, much longer than they used to. And a lot of work has gone into that. And they, you know, to some extent, it still relies on some memory unsafe languages. So, you know, can they get away from it entirely? No. Will they ever get away from it completely? Probably not. But, you know, it's just we've made so many advances in hardware that I think it's probably time for the industry. You know, I think the White House is right. And I think it's probably time for the industry to recoup some of those gains into migrating libraries that can handle it, you know, into something memory safe to prevent this sort of thing.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of memory, right, if we continue on this train of Apple goodness, you know, we get down to WebKit. And I swear, this has sprinkles of, you know, Operation Triangulation from last year where they used that, like, five exploit chain. And it was, like, some memory safety issues in PDF, right? Or it might have been Image.io. I can't remember exactly. But, you know, they went through, like, four or five vulnerabilities to, you know, attack Apple. And this kind of feels like a lot of the same, right? This WebKit stuff where processing web content may lead to arbitrary code execution, right? Like, is that not like just everyone's biggest fear where your user clicks on a link in a phishing email and you don't even have to get them to like execute something, right? They're just running Safari and, you know, have at them, right? And, you know, Matt, I'm curious your thoughts on, you know, a lot of this stuff and, you know, how we can kind of educate our users to some of these things without kind of putting on the paranoid hat and scaring them half to death, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, right? Because, you know, there's so much research behind all these memory-related vulnerabilities and... I think the first thing that came to mind when the White House issued that press release was, you know, what's the effort to actually move everything to a memory safe language, right? Is it just packages? Is it a full uplift of a whole application? You know, is it just moving everything over? So, you know, while I think that's a really interesting thing that they're doing, I don't know if it's going to be realistic for a lot of orgs unless they're looking to maybe rebuild something potentially from the ground up, right? I guess it's all sort of dependent on the organization. But as far as users, right, I mean, training is the hardest thing in cybersecurity, right? It's you can send out as many phishing campaigns, as many sort of articles. I think there's just it's sort of balancing the technical with potentially showing what one of these things can do and explaining it to somebody who may not be as technical, right? Where that's the hardest thing. So, I mean, all of these things are, it's a little worrisome because just like you said, it's a user could just go to a web page and download a file and then boom, bam, like your Mac is just kind of, I mean, it's rooted, right? So, I mean, as much training as you can, but there's always going to be users that, you know, you send out phishing and they're always the ones like first one to click on it. Right. And so it's, I don't know if there's a good answer for it besides maybe even like demos or something showing how this can be dangerous or something like that. Right.
Yeah. Agreed. And, you know, a lot of what you said kind of reminds me of, you know, like 2 or 3 years ago, there was this big push in the industry from all of our Linux friends to rewrite the kernel in Rust, right?
Yep,
and Linus is like, who's going to rewrite 30 million lines of code in Rust, you know?
I'll get right on that.
Right. You know, that's right. It's just an undertaking, like, you know, because the kernel is written, you know, mostly in C. So, right, like
it's one of those things of like the best time to start was 10 years ago. The second best time to start is now. Right. Yeah. It's going to be painful. It's going to require a lot of work, but you know, this is necessary work that just needs to happen. And it's going to be interesting too, to see what it happens in the software sector, because I think, you know, as we've discussed a lot of times, the companies like us that are prioritizing and have made it a priority for a long time are going to do really well. And there's other companies out there that are kind of in the position of being, for lack of a better term, they're cash cows. And so they're pretty stable. Their feature's stable. They've got an established market.
Yeah.
They don't put a lot of, you know, work into updating and modernizing their product besides what is absolutely necessary. And when you have a major sea change like this, it's necessary. It's beyond what they're resourced to do. And so some are going to have to make that investment, and others are going to choose not to make that investment. And it'll be interesting to watch the market forces play out, because I think the ones who aren't making it a priority are gonna hurt in a bad way over the next few years when the comparison becomes more stark.
Yeah, you know, those security questionnaires will start rolling in, like, is your product using memory safe languages, yes or no? Mm-hmm. Right, like that's just kind of the market forces.
Yeah, there's going to be some ugly answers to those compliance questionnaires, and I can't wait.
Yeah, I wonder also if people will prioritize certain parts of their apps, right? Or things that are running on computers.
I think they should.
Maybe there's just like parts of an agent or something that runs that you might just want to convert those pieces if possible, or prioritize those pieces which are dealing with sensitive data or something along those lines, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's, you know, you can look at your stack and say, okay, what deals, you know, what is user exposed, right? What can be touched by users or by, you know, outside entities that I can't control? What's public facing? What's downloadable? What takes, right, input and out, you know, what processes input, right? Like, start there. Those are the places to really begin. You know, most of the bugs that we see of any flavor these days has to do with, you know, taking input, right? Parsing is always a huge area for errors to turn into exploitable bugs. And so, you know, you start with those things, you build out a methodical plan to expand it, and you just keep going. But if you don't make that investment, you know, and take it seriously and sustain it over time, you'll never get there.
Yeah.
It all comes back to the point of invest in a security team, right? Because plug in that old security team, because developers, yeah, you know, they're going to develop, and you know, some are very security conscious, but it's just a lot of that's why we exist, right? Is to advise, to help them prioritize and point out issues. So
that's right, it's not overhead, it's table stakes.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's truth. That is the truth these days. Well, that's all the time we have for today. We thank you for listening to our Fix Tuesday podcast every Patch Tuesday. And if you're interested, there are other podcasts. You know, shout out to Jason Sisso podcast. That's a great one. And again, thanks everyone for joining in. We hope your week is relaxing. Cue the cheesy outro music. Boom, 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 boom.
He's not gonna
absolutely. For sure. He'll leave it all in, right?
Yep.